Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Today, I think for the third time, we have Robert Diaz back, the Golden Boy matchmaker.
Thank you. Thank you for having me once again. It's a pleasure, and we always have some fun. So I hope the fans enjoy it, and let's get going.
I think there's a congratulations, Renato. I hear you got inducted into the West Coast Boxing Hall of Fame.
Thank you. Thank you. That was Sunday. Great honor. I mean, just to be recognized and amongst, you know, some of the best out there in the history of boxing, and just to be able to partake, you know, and the name be recognized as somebody that's involved in boxing and trying to do, you know, what we do and provide the fans with some of the best fights.
Quite a cast. Oscar, Dougie, Zarate, Johnny Tapia.
Johnny Tapia, yes. Eder Jofre. The Ruelas brothers. It was quite a big group. I mean, obviously with COVID, they didn't do it last year. So they joined a couple years all in one, and it was very nice to see some old faces, familiar faces, some friends I hadn't seen in a long time, and to be a part of this great group.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Kind of moving on to the Golden Boy stable, probably the biggest news I think of late was obviously Jorge Diaz was scheduled to fight Ryan, but Ryan came down with an injury. Can you give us any update on that, Robert?
He had surgery, successful surgery. Obviously now it's just a waiting game and in his rehabilitation to, you know, strengthen the hand, but everything was a success. So we're just, you know, excited that that's behind him, and now looking forward to the future. Hopefully have him back in the first quarter of next year.
Was it an injury during sparring, or
it was something that was bothering him for quite a while now, but it was bound to, you know, when a fighter is, they use their hands, those are the tools. Mm. and somebody like Ryan that hits, you know, so sharp, so hard, obviously with time it starts bothering, because they've been doing it since they were, in his case, probably like 7-8 years old, hitting, and bound to cause problems with, you know, over time.
Last time you were on, you told us about how you actually came about signing Jorge Diaz. Is there any kind of good story about how you actually got your hands on Ryan?
Well, Ryan, his then manager, you know, a lot of times we get DVDs, we get videos, we get emails with links on fighters. And a lot of times the fighters are jumping rope, hitting the heavy bag, or sparring, shadow boxing. And I tell a lot of the managers, you know, I really don't want to see that. Or don't even send me highlights. Send me the real deal. Send me the whole sparring session. Send me the whole fight. Even sparring sessions I don't like, because obviously they can be controlled. So I like seeing fights. I like seeing the real thing, because that's where you really see the character, when he gets dropped, when he gets up, when you learn more about the fighter. And in Ryan's case, a lot of the times what people would say is, hey, I got the next Mike Tyson. I got the next Floyd Mayweather. I got the next Oscar De La Hoya. And his manager at the time didn't say that. He said, hey, take a look, see if you're interested in this kid. I manage him. I think Ryan had like 6 or 7 fights at the time. And when I saw him, I said, wow, kid's good looking. He could fight. Had a lot of amateur experience. And I thought to myself, this looks like he could be the next Oscar De La Hoya. So it wasn't somebody telling me, it was me seeing it for the, you know. And we discussed with his then manager, Roger Ruiz, and we went back and forth, and we're very fortunate to have signed him.
At that time, did he have that huge social media following? And then
No. He had like 7 fights. I mean, it was big for 7 fights, but it wasn't something that you were going to be shocked at or be like, wow, who is this? You know, he was like any young fighter starting out, excited, wanting to get going. But little by little, you started seeing this potential and this growth and how fast. And I'll give you a good example. My oldest son, I had a birthday party for him. And a lot of his friends were here. And I mean, he's in his 20s, but never had his friends. Maybe once or twice a friend would come up, hey, you know, when so-and-so fighting, when so, but it was always like, when is Canelo fighting? When is Hopkins fighting? When, you know, the big names. And Ryan still was a young man fighting 8 rounds. And a lot of his friends were coming up, boys, girls, everybody was coming up and saying, hey, when's King Ryan fighting? When's King Ryan fighting? So I'm like, oh, wow, he's getting the attention of not the, you know, the purest boxing fan. He's getting the attention of his peers of his age, outside of boxing. A couple weeks later, I had a Christmas party here at the house with my friends, all in their 40s and 50s and maybe even more. And a lot of them came up to me and said, hey, when is this Ryan Garcia going to fight again? I can't wait to see him. So he was getting the attention across the board, but more importantly, outside of boxing fans, not just your everyday boxing fans, but the outside. So that was very impressive. That was very impressive. And that's where I started saying, hey, you know what? He has that it factor, which means he's going to cross over outside of boxing fans.
With obviously boxing being a business and with how huge social media is now, is that something that you look at, you know, when you're looking at signing a prospect? He may not have, you know, world star potential maybe, but he's got a huge media following.
At the time, no, because it was still fairly new for all of us. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, it's going to be very, very hard to find somebody even close to being like Ryan Garcia, because he's just a natural. And a lot of people think it's not hard work. That is hard work, too. I mean, I can't get past a certain number of followers because it's like, okay, I don't have the time. But would I like it? Of course I'd like it. You know, we'd all would. But he has that connection. One of the things is he does communicate and interact with his fans, and they love that. So, but most importantly, and in his case, is not so much what he can do on social media that catches our eyes. It's more on the boxing, what he can do inside the ring, which he can do. And he's shown it. He can do it. That's the most important thing, because you could do a lot of this on the outside, but it's not going to help you in that ring at the end of the day. So how far can it go, or how far can you mask it? Now, I wouldn't say that if there's a kid, maybe no social media at all, but sells a lot of tickets because he has a huge fan base or family and everything. Well, that's an attraction to put him on, because like you said, at the end of the day, it is business. You want to sell tickets, and sometimes the bigger names don't. So you need that undercard or those young kids that go out there and just have that, you know, mass attraction from the fans and family and friends, maybe because they're in their hometown or they're close or just well-liked.
Right. Any news on the potential Jojo Diaz and Devin Haney fight?
It's in the works. It's going back and forth. You know what? Everybody wants it. And then when, like I said in the past, when two sides want it, it's not easy, but it could get done. So hopefully we'll have some news on that soon. But at this point, no, we don't have anything finalized.
We sang his praises, you know, last time you were on, so we probably shouldn't do it too much now. But Jojo just doesn't seem to turn down a fight ever since he's kind of come back and reinvigorated himself with the mental health and the stuff that he had, you know, away from the ring.
Jojo is a throwback fighter. He's one of those fighters that you know, when the Fortuna fight became available, he raised his hand and said, hey, I'll go to 35 and fight him. And at first I thought he was joking. And I'm like, maybe he just doesn't want to make the 30 pounds anymore. He wants to go up to lightweight. But then it made sense, because it's like Fortuna's not a natural lightweight. So, okay, let's give it a go. And once he was there, the whole plan was you beat Fortuna, come back down to 30. But then it was like, wait a minute, the big fights are here. And then, you know, you got the interim title. Now let's go on and, you know, go get you paid and go on into these bigger fights. Obviously, he was ready to go with Ryan. And now with Haney, he's been very vocal and says, you know, I want him. Jojo's never in all his career has ever turned down a fight. I mean, he's fought every style. He's fought every tough opponent. He's come up a tough way. And that's what gives him that mental edge as well, with his experience of saying, I can face him because I've seen it all. Or I've seen most of it.
Is the idea, you know, win, lose, or draw for JoJo? He'll face Ryan when Ryan comes back, or?
I always liked one fight at a time. I mean, obviously, if this fight gets done now with Haney, then, you know, focus on that one and the future will tell. If it doesn't get down with Haney or doesn't happen right now, then most likely, yes, in the first quarter of next year would be the fight with Ryan. Reschedule it.
Moving on, Virgil Ortiz. Any news on him? Obviously, he's the mandatory for the WBO, which is held by Terence Crawford. He has a scheduled fight with Sean Porter. Is the idea to put he faces the winner?
Well, the mandatory is Sean Porter for Crawford right now. We haven't been ordered a mandatory. Obviously, he has the mandatory due now, so we're just waiting to see. Virgil will stay busy. Hopefully, we'll see him in the first quarter of next year, like as early as January. But he's training. He's always in the gym. That's one thing with Virgil. He's always in the gym. I saw a post saying, hey, you know what? If the Ryan fight doesn't happen, I'm ready. I can take the date. But obviously, we're working on a couple other things. But yes, Virgil's ready to go, ready to face, and willing to face anybody in the top. He wants to fight for the world titles. And that's the characteristic of the young men that we have. They're willing to fight anybody. And that's great for us, and especially for me, not only just as a promoter, but as a matchmaker, because it is tough sometimes to match them because not everybody wants to face them, but they're willing to face anybody. And I'm talking about JoJo, Ryan, Virgil, Zurdo, Munguia. They're willing. I mean, Munguia has been wanting to fight Golovkin for the longest time. So, you know, and obviously Rosado right now is next up in line, and it's no easy pickings. Rosado has rejuvenated his career and probably one of his best moments of his career because he has the experience now, but he also has the discipline, and now put that together, and that makes it very dangerous, especially when they're hungry. And I believe Rosado is very hungry.
Is it difficult at times to get people to face, you know, someone like a Virgil Ortiz? Because Golden Boy always seemed to be willing to work with other promotions. You know, you do things with Top Rank and, you know, Matchroom. But, you know, PBC in particular, they always seem to just want to keep things in-house and they won't, you know, open up and, you know, risk losing one of their titles and never being able to get it back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It does make it difficult, especially in the divisions. For instance, in Virgil's, where a lot of the fighters in the top of the division are with one promoter. And that one promoter is not willing to, like you said, take the risk or, you know, let's just do the fights. I mean, the best example there is how come Spence and Crawford has not been done yet? You know, they're both in their 30s. By the time it happens, it may be too late for the fans. I mean, we'll still tune in. We'll still watch because it's still going to be an intriguing fight. But don't wait too long because the sizzle's going to, you know, it's going to shut off. And Leonard, my best example is Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns when they first fought. They were in their early 20s, not in their early 30s. So these fights need to happen. They need to happen. And you know what? Sometimes you got to take risks. And sometimes it's for the better of boxing that you make these fights. And like you said, at Golden Boy, we've worked with Top Rank. We've worked with Frank Warren. We worked with Matchroom. We've worked with Main Events. We've worked with Don King. I mean, PBC, we've worked with all the promoters because if the fights make sense for the fans, for the fighters, we're all in to try to make them.
That's true. You know, it seems to be the only way things are going to happen, but, you know, PBC just always seem to want to keep it in-house and, you know, don't want to share the toys.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. And then, you know what? Hopefully it could change. And at the end of the day, it's like the playoffs. It's like the Super Bowl. It's like the World Cup. Put your best against everybody's best. And, you know, everybody's fighting each other. Boxing wins. It's not about what promoter won or what fighter won. Boxing wins. The fans win. And at the end of the day, the fighters win.
Somebody that actually took a chance during COVID, Joshua Franco. He's got a scheduled fight coming up with the winner of Chocolatito against Estrada. What an unbelievable year, 2 years Joshua Franco's had.
Absolutely. I'm very proud of Joshua. I mean, look, he had those three fights, 30 rounds with Oscar Negrete. That prepared him because those were tough fights. You know, Negrete is always in your face, and Joshua, from the first one, you saw an improvement in the second one, and then an improvement in the third one, just kept getting better and better. And I totally believed when he was going into the Maloney fight, it was going to be a tough fight, but he was ready because of those Negrete fights. And obviously now as champion, his confidence level, his work ethic, I mean, he's always had great work, that could, but everything, you take it up a notch, and you're so much more motivated to hold on, because like the saying goes, it's hard to get to the top, but it's harder to stay there at the top. And now, this is a blessing. I mean, this is a great big opportunity for him. It's not going to be easy, because obviously whoever wins that next fight, it's going to be a tough fight, but you know what? That's Joshua. He's up for it. He's motivated for it. And I love the opportunity, because he's going to fight, whether it's a Mexican legend or he's going to fight the Nicaraguan legend, but he's going to fight one of the top guys in the division and one of the best in the history if it's Chocolatito.
Obviously, you know, Franco's from Texas, his brother, Hector Tanahara, Errol Spence, you know, you have quite a few, seems to be a bit of a hotbed. Is that something that you look at when signing people? Do you?
Well, Texas is a huge, I mean, obviously the big state of Texas, but huge boxing fan state. I mean, you can go to San Antonio, you can go to El Paso, you can go to Houston, you can go to Dallas, and boxing is there. I mean, every time we've traveled into Texas for our events from many years ago to now, the fans show up. So they really support their fighters. They really support their teams. And it's always fun to go and see that fan base really show up and turn it on. We have the Rincon brothers that bring in a lot of fans. And, you know, Marlene Esparza is from Texas, and she's really loved. So it's through the history we have. Texas has been very important with Golden Boy Promotions. Rocky Juarez, Juan Diaz, the Chardo brothers, the list goes on.
Somebody that's been kind of working away in the shadows and just came up with a world title chance coming up, Jason Quigley. He's obviously November the 19th, he's facing Andrade. That kind of came out with nowhere. I remember Jason obviously had his first loss at Fantasy Springs, went away, kind of worked away, kind of in the lower cards, and then now he's come back with a great win. And now he's got his big chance.
You know what? I'm so happy for him. I'm so proud of him. Obviously, the injury, the loss. The injury with Glenn Tapia. He didn't just break his hand. People, you know, really came hard on him, but he didn't just break his hand. I mean, it could have been a career-ending injury, because it was really devastating. It was really bad, the injury. Obviously, he had the surgery, was out for a full year. People don't understand these are your tools. Imagine breaking it, and just in normal, just ordinary life, you're going to be a little bit, overprotective of, you know, using the hand. And I'm not even talking boxing. But now add boxing to it, where you're going to have to throw that hand and not be sure how it's going to react. So it takes a couple fights to really get back in. Then the loss with Toriano Johnson, it really does show you character in a fighter when you can come back from an injury and a defeat like that. And then look where he's at today. Jason's a very cheerful fella. He's a very happy young man. He's always in the gym training. You don't have to worry about, is he going to make weight? Is he going to get in trouble? He's very mature, knows what he wants. It's not going to be an easy task, but it's not supposed to when you're fighting for the world title. When you're fighting a world champion, and in this case, a two-division world champion, undefeated, it's not supposed to, but he's very motivated. He's not cutting corners. He's working hard. And again, back to the Gabriel Rosado example, when a fighter believes he can win, it's tough to prove him wrong. It's tough to show him wrong. And you know what? He's coming with everything, especially a lot of fans are coming out there to support him. The Irish will be there present. That's going to motivate him more. Obviously, they can't step in the ring and fight for him, but Jason knows what he has to do. Jason has that dog in him. He could fight. He could box. He could move. He can go short distance. So he just needs to go in there and make it a fight and take it to Demetrius.
You touched on Gabe Rosado. He's fighting Jaime Munguia November the 13th, so the week before. You think the change in trainer has helped Munguia?
I think the change in trainer has helped both of them, and because you see a definitely improvement in both of them. Munguia, in his last fight, I actually text Eric Morales and congratulate him because I saw, obviously with experience, with time, confidence, and growth, you could start seeing it. And we got to remember, Munguia's like 24 years old. He's still really young to already be campaigning in a second division, almost close to another world title. But for the first time, I saw a fighter in there having fun. And I'm talking about Jaime. He was boxing and moving his head and bending his waist, but not trying to load with every punch. He was actually touching, and then coming in with the big punch. So I saw things in that in this last fight that I really, really liked because you could see the progress. Mm-hmm. And Gabe Rosado, I said it already. I mean, he changed. He's training with Freddie Roach and Marvin Simoleo. So you see the improvement. You see the enjoyment back in the ring after so many years. The routine is what kills the fighter. I think they're over and over. How many years am I going to? But when they're having fun and you can see that, then the displays inside the ring based on the performances and the results.
He arguably could have or should have got the nod over Danny Jacobs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was one of the reasons I called him in because I said, look, if Bektamir knocks out Gabriel Sala, who's coming off this controversial, where many people saw him win, including myself, what better promotion could I give Bektamir by saying, look, he knocked out Gabriel Sala. If it wouldn't have been because of that Jacobs close decision, Gabriel Sala wouldn't be in the path of a Bektamir Melkuziev. But because of that fight, we said, this is perfect. You know, it wasn't so perfect because somebody forgot to give Gabe Rosado the script. You know, hey, you're not supposed to go past five rounds with Beck. But I think it's going to be a very good learning experience for Beck. Beck's right back in the gym. He's here in India training. He actually, him and his team called a week later, a few days after the fight, and said, hey, get me the rematch. You don't have to pay me. I'll fight for free. I want the rematch. That's a real fighter. Nobody fights for free. Nobody even calls and says, get me the rematch that quick. But not only did he say, get me the rematch, I won't charge on this one. That's how much he wanted to say. It was a mistake. I got caught. But obviously, Gabe, with that win, moved on to a bigger, better fight for himself.
Is there a scheduled date for Beck's return?
Yeah, I'm working on right now, possibly in December before the end of the year to get him back in there. Absolutely.
So turning my attention to last week, Friday the 15th of October, the Pechanga Arena, San Diego on ESPN+. Navarrete got the unanimous decision 12 over Yoet Gonzalez, who dropped to 24-2. This was for the WBO featherweight world title. What a performance from Yoet Gonzalez.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very proud of Yoet. I mean, obviously, we didn't come away with the win like he wanted, like we wanted. But what we did come away with is, without a question, that heart and cojones that he showed and never started going backwards. Actually, nobody would have criticized or judged him if he would have said, you know what, stop the fight, or the corner would have stopped it. But he kept coming forward, very gutsy. I saw him post to the fans, I think it was today or yesterday, would you guys like to see a rematch down the line? I'd like to see a little rest. Obviously, it was a tough fight, a grueling fight. So a good little rest and then come back slowly with a couple of fights. And then obviously go for it once again, because he's a kid that's very dedicated, knows what he wants, hard worker. No joke. Navarrete is no joke. I mean, it's very, very awkward, but it's effective for him. And obviously he can punch because couple punches into the fight, he's already busting up Joed, who's never been busted up, and cuts him here, cuts him there. But respects to him. I mean, he is a very tough fighter. I'm not one of the guys that, I mean, I'd like to actually watch because of the style. It throws me off, but sort of reminds me of a Bazooka Limon, you know, very awkward, but very effective for him, and a tough, tough, tough kid. I mean, every time Joed would come back and try to get him with a combination, I'm like, okay, how come you're not falling? How come you're not getting tired? Okay, go down already. But he kept coming like that little Energizer bunny.
You know, Joe obviously comes from a fighting family, you know, obviously him and his brother, both, you know, very, very good. And hopefully we'll see them, you know, fit and well and back out soon.
Yes, 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 yes. And his sister used to fight. His sister was at one time number one in the nation in the amateur. So, yeah, definitely fighting brothers. His younger brother's now fighting. He's like in the welterweight division. He's still doing some amateur fights. So definitely the fighting family.
Last time we had you on, we spoke about how, you know, Frankie Gomez had all the talent in the world and then kind of just dropped off. I'm kind of springing the question on you. I should have probably told you before. But is there anybody else that springs to mind that you've had or you've seen that had all this talent but just kind of disappeared from the boxing sphere?
It happens quite often, more than not. Some fighters that maybe we haven't heard yet because even at early stage, they disappear or always think tomorrow. And next thing you know, they're in the 30s and that's when they're coming back. But a name that comes to mind right from recent memory is Genaro Gomez from San Diego. Tremendous amateur fighter. We signed him, did his pro debut. Tremendous talent. He had something in of him that you'd see him and say, who is that kid? You know, he had that it as well. And very confident in the ring. But it was a little bit of a discipline thing. Hard to control the weight, and several times he missed weight at fights, had to pay penalties, and was fighting at a weight class that really wasn't his at 140. I would have loved for him to be at 130. I think he would have been devastating at 130, but obviously it takes a lot of hard work and sacrifice to keep the weight under control. But even at 135, he could have done some things, and he still can. He still can. He's still young enough. I mean, hopefully I haven't talked to him in a long time, but it's a kid that I really got close to because I had some heart to heart with him and said, you know what, Genaro, you have tremendous talent, man. Just don't let it go to waste. Because it's sad when you see somebody with so much talent in anything they do, throw it away because of whatever reason. It's like, what a shame. And like you said, Frankie Gomez is one of them.
I saw him fight at Fantasy Springs. I'm sure he's fought at Fantasy Springs, right?
Genaro Gomez fought at Fantasy Springs several times. Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
I tell you, who else do you kind of dropped off that was part of Golden Boy? It was Caballero, Randy.
Randy had some issues in his ankle. I think, in fact, he had surgery. His ankle was giving him a lot of pain. And again, it's part of the body's not made for getting hit and going through what it is that it goes through and everything it goes through in boxing. And much less when you're that young. You know, Randy started boxing, I believe, at the age of 8 or 9, 10, through the amateurs, all that wear and tear, you know, finally makes it into the pros and fighting. He started having this pain that wouldn't really allow him to keep going. And he's called me. We've been in touch. We always stay in touch. And he has that itch. He has that itch to come back. And he says the pain's not there anymore. And he's actually, you know, training, moving, boxing. He says, I go in there now. I see things. And that happens. That's part of the maturity. That's part of the growth. He says, I watch fights now. And now I see things that I didn't see before. You know, setting up traps, doing it, and it makes more sense. And now with the knowledge, I wanted to go in there before. And I said, you know what, Randy, do it before it's too late. Because what you don't want is to sit back one day in that chair and say, I could have, I should have, and I didn't. You know, it's go do it now. And if it's something you really want to do and that love for it is back, you miss that gym, that sweat, the gloves, the leather, the punches, the blood, the cut, go do it before it's too late. So we haven't seen the last, I could say. We probably haven't seen the last of Randy Caballero.
Well, that'd be good, you know, because he obviously was world champion briefly and then kind of just disappeared.
Yeah. He, I think, you know, one of the way he, how difficult it was for him to win the title because he went on the road for an eliminator and then went out to Monaco to fight for the world title, bring it back home, but then lose it on the scale in his first defense. I think that could have played a part on it, of saying, man, all that hard work, all those years. And even though he won the world title, and I always told him, hey, you won the world title. Nobody could ever take that away from you. He didn't feel like a world champion at the time because he never defended it. So you have to defend it. That's when the money was going to start coming. And obviously he had a big opportunity against Diego de la Hoya, but he wasn't 100% when he told me is after the fights and the foot, the ankle really bothered him. I was, in fact, almost going to pull out. So as long as he's 100% back, he was always very fun and exciting to watch because he brought out, even when he shouldn't have had to trade, he would trade. He always liked to fight for the fans. You know, something about him and Mauricio Herrera, sometimes you would see them trade and go to war for the fans when they didn't have to. But it's something of that. I don't know if it's that. Well, one's from Riverside, one's from Coachella, but they would always get cheered, pumped up for the fans. And that's what excited me about both of them as well, because I was a big fan of watching them fight, because Mauricio was another one, never turned down a fight, fought everybody. I mean, in his career, he fought everybody, fought them all.
You know, I've been to a lot of fights, and you know, one of the best atmospheres I've been to, Mauricio Herrera against Jesus Otocaraz.
Right. That, I mean, Mauricio brought a lot of fans because, look, Mauricio didn't have a big punch. Mm. Mauricio didn't have a fast style of boxing or counterpunch. He had actually a weird style that you know, he rolled with the punches and took the power away from your opponent. Soto Caraz was nonstop, big puncher, can take a punch. That was just a natural. In fact, all three of them fought each other. Mauricio fought Cano fought Soto Caraz fought Mauricio. It was those three guys that fought each other a couple times, and it was like, you couldn't miss. They had to be fan favorite fights for them.
Yeah, I remember that fight, Herrera and Caraz, and at Fantasy Springs. You know, neither of them have like a huge punch. So like for the last two rounds, I don't think anybody was sat down because they knew they were just going to go like, you know, the three minutes. And then it was just the end of the fight. So yeah, it was a great atmosphere.
Yeah. Mauricio. And I mean, both of them, Mauricio and Jesus Soto Caraz were fan favorites. They both brought in big crowds, and because of the way they fought, those are the type of fighters that fought for the fans. They fought their fights of saying, look, I'm going to trade. I'm going to give you guys what you came to see.
And before we let you go, Rob, I just want to touch on something that's kind of hit the headlines lately, and really due to a few things that Eddie Hearn said, is rematch clauses. You know, he's got a lot of stick for, you know, Dillian Whyte having a rematch clause when he fought Povetkin, and then, you know, recent fights. You know, how often is it, you know, rematch clauses are put in?
Normally, they have to put in when you are fighting, you're a world champion, and you're fighting a challenger who's not a mandatory. You're giving him that opportunity. And the reason you see that is you never know what can happen. If you beat me fair and square and beat me, okay, then you won. You deserve to win. But sometimes a headbutt, a bad decision, the judges, I mean, give a bad decision, or the referee stops it early. That rematch clause is there to protect that fighter that was the world champion and said, I'll give you the voluntary defense. But in the event you come up, I come up short, I want my rematch. And in those cases, that's common. That's been going on for years. But now it's not a world title fight. And, you know, just rematch clause for whatever reason, it could never end. Because does the other fighter get a rematch in that second fight? Should he win? And it just keeps it in that circle or in that bubble? No, it shouldn't be. I mean, there's also promoters or manager times that say, okay, well, I want options if your guy beats my guy. And it's like, okay, if it's a world title fight, sure, you get an option, a rematch. Or if it's not the rematch, one more against a ranked fighter or somebody of your stable. But recently I got an offer and it was like, we want three options on your guy and it's not even a world title fight. Should your guy win? I said, no, that's not acceptable. So it depends on the situation, how big the situation is. If it's a big opportunity for one in your stable, you go for it. You know, Joshua Franco, for instance, when we got the fight with Maloney, we were not a mandatory. So we could have passed on it and keep working our way up, become a mandatory, but could have taken a year. And then with the COVID comes in, 2 years, who knows? Who knows how long it could have been? We took the opportunity. We all agreed as a team, in the event of Joshua winning, which he did, he owed Top Rank two options, which became that second and third fight. Now he's free to go do a voluntary, and in this case, now he's the mandatory himself for the winner of Estrada and Chocolatito. So it's about, it could have been then, or it could have been waited till now. So you it depends on how big the opportunity and what you have to give up. If it makes sense for the fighter, you do it.
So when they do the options, how does that work if they're owned by you then? Do you get a choice in who they get? Like, you get a slice of the pie? Because obviously...
Well, what you do is if you own, basically, your guy wins or his guy wins, the other guy wins, but you have options on him, you can work it of two ways. The next two fights are going to be under my promotion, even though he's your fighter in association with, and he's going to fight this guy or that guy or whoever I have. Obviously, they have to agree, but it's worked out in there. Or I can say, you go do the promotion, he's your fighter, but in the next two fights of the options, I just want to get paid a certain fee. So it depends on how the agreement is done.
I think for the rematches, I think the reason it kind of hit the headlines was because Usyk was a mandatory for the Joshua fight, but they still managed to get in a rematch clause.
I believe the reason that happened is he was the mandatory with the WBO, but not with the IBF. That could have been one of the reasons that there was a rematch clause in a mandatory situation. So I don't know in particular why, because obviously I didn't read the contract, but that's the only thing I can see of why there was a rematch clause in that particular fight, because if I'm Usyk, why am I going to give you a rematch if I'm the mandatory? However, you also might say, I'm the mandatory, there's a rematch clause because he can do it. And what is Usyk going to say? If that money's really good in the rematch, then why not do the rematch clause? You know, so it's like, it depends on what. Well, I think it's more because of the IBF. He had that other title as well.
And there's probably not a bigger payday in the division, right, than fighting AJ, so you'd be kind of foolish.
Exactly. They put a rematch clause. Why not? It's guaranteed the next fight. And in Usyk's mind, look, I'm going in there. I'm undefeated. He was very confident. I thought AJ was going to win, so I picked that one wrong. But all props to Usyk. I mean, he fought a magnificent fight. I'm a firm believer that AJ, can't forget that AJ started boxing late. He's not one of the kids that started at 10 years old. So he's still learning on the job. And to already have been heavyweight champion at a short period of time, you got to give him props. And I think he's still learning. I think he could still improve from that first fight, because I saw a different AJ, very hesitant. Could have been the movement, could have been the southpaw. I don't think it was the punching. So I think we'll see a different fight, definitely. I mean, definitely an improvement in AJ. Is it enough? I don't know, but that's what makes the fight interesting.
Since we're kind of briefly talking about heavyweights, something I wanted to ask you actually a couple of weeks back was Deontay Wilder. He was briefly with Golden Boy. So how did that signing come about? And could you see the potential in him? You know, did you think he was going to become what he did?
Absolutely. We signed him through his manager, who brought over a group of fighters, and Deontay was one of them. He was with Shelly Finkel. We signed him pro debut, coming back from the Olympics from Beijing. We had 33 of his fights for 5 years, maybe a little bit over 5 years, because 33 fights sounds like a lot. It might have been a little bit over 5 years, but up until he won the world title and brought the heavyweight title back to America for the first time in many years, it was exciting. It was fun. It was bittersweet to see basically our time with Deontay had ended, but at the same time, he had won the title and quieted a lot of critics, because if we remember early on in Deontay's career, people were criticizing him. He's not fighting anybody. He's fighting tomato cans. He's not fighting. He was fighting whatever they put in front of him, whatever we put in front of him. And yes, he was matched careful because he can punch. And I knew right away from the right hand, anybody he touched would go to sleep. And but he also had, at the time, he was learning again. You know, he started late in boxing, even though he won a bronze medal, he started late. And there was questions of why test him with a big puncher until we get to the heavyweight title. At that point, you got to do your job, young man. And he did it. He knocked out Stavern and won the heavyweight title.
There's that kind of like myth or rumor that he didn't he have a fight at Fantasy Springs where he got knocked down, but people said that he got knocked out and they got rid of all the video or something like that. I remember reading some rumor on Twitter.
He got dropped. He got dropped. And it was tough. At that point, I didn't think he was going to get up. But he did what Fury did. He got up, rose. The only difference was this was early in the fight, not at the end. And he knocked out his opponent, Harold Scaniers. Harold Scaniers, a tough guy, not the prettiest record. But in the heavyweight division, one punch. Deontay went down. I believe it was like in the second round. But he got up, recuperated, ended the round. And then a round or two later, knocked out Scaniers. So at that point, it's like, okay, you know, if I can do, and this was early on, I believe it was Deontay's like 10th or 11th fight. So it was like, stay away from punchers right now. Stay away from punchers. Let's keep building as he basically has the time to work in the gym and with the trainer and jab and use his reach and boxing. But we always knew if he touched you, you're out. So at that point, it's like build. But why take the risk until it's the important fight and the bigger fight? Or as he's in the top 10 in the rankings and these eliminators happen or you're matched against somebody, okay, well, we got to go this route if that's where we want to go. And it worked out perfectly, 33-0 at the time and the WBC world champion.
Right. I mean, he had an outstanding career. I think it's just Fury, Tyson Fury has his number.
You know, Tyson Fury is definitely has shown remarkable. I personally, before the Wilder trilogy, wasn't a real big believer in Tyson Fury. I never saw anything that really was like, wow. You beat Klitschko. I said, okay, maybe Klitschko was at the point where he was ready to exit, you know, age and everything. But coming in and now beating Wilder, which in the first fight, even though it was a draw, you got to say, hey, you know what? They should have given it to Fury. He took away the right hand in that fight by boxing, by moving, by making Deontay miss with the right. Second fight, he comes in, and now he's the aggressor. And in the third fight, to come back from the knockdowns twice and look like he was shaken up and everything and recompose himself. You know, at one point I thought maybe he's not in the best shape. Maybe he didn't take this third fight so serious. But everything he does, I think he's doing for a reason and it works in his favor. Very savvy. Does things in that ring that you're like, okay. You tend to think he's been doing it longer than 30 plus fights because there's things that he does in there that some fans might say, oh, those are illegal. That's called savvy. That's called experience. And if the third man in the ring is not taking points or anything like that. And I'm not saying cheating, nothing of the cheating. No. I'm saying savvy in that ring to his Roberto Duran was one of the savviest. I mean, you know, everybody with time starts becoming long in the tooth and starts like, okay, I can do this, I can do that, and use the body weight, for instance. You know, that tires out, and I'm sure that played a big effect on Deontay, but that's not cheating. That's using what you have in your favor because at the end of the day, I got to win, so I'm going to use what I have. Deontay's mistake in my personal, I mean, and obviously it's after the fact you could say it and then it's easier to say. I would have bulked up on the legs instead of the upper body. Deontay needed more of that speed up top, elusiveness up top. I loved what I saw, and I had said it before. I hope he comes out jabbing more to set up the right hand, not just go right hand. But he did it only in the first round, using the jab, going to the body, maybe looking to feint. But in the second and third, it's almost like Fury took it out of let's start trading and took him out of that boxing where he would have used more legs, more of the ring, kept Fury outside, kept him out on the jab until waiting to land the right hand.
You touched on, you had obviously Wilder for the first around 33 fights and you took him to the world championship. How hard is it for you as a matchmaker and somebody that signs fighters to not get too close to the boxers, you know, because it is a business and, you know, they are, you know, at times going to leave and go somewhere else. And
it's tough. It's tough because we're human. I get close to a lot of the fighters. Not all. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I get close to all of them because there's so many. At one time we had close to 100 fighters in the stable. So it is very difficult to get close, but through the years, you get closer to some than you do with others because of depending on how often you see or the relationship or the type of, you know, some fighters will come to me and say, what do you recommend? Or what do you think? Or what would you do? Or what? So you develop more of that bond. I was very close with Randy Caballero, very close with Jorge Linares, with Pablo Cesar Cano. There's so many. I mean, the list goes on that I've become very, very, Jason Quigley, I'm very close with. Ronnie Rios and Alexis Roach, I'm very close with. I mean, there's so many out there. Lamont Roach Jr., I'm very close with him and his family. He's gone to me to Puerto Rico. I've gone with him to Cancun. I've gone, you know, to fight for fights. But it's like, hey, let's take it on the road. So you become very, very close with a lot of the fighters. Because of that relationship, I mean, a lot of the fighters tell me, Ryan Garcia's told me, JoJo's told me, they can hear my voice when I'm yelling. And Jason, Shane Mosley Jr. has told me, they hear my voice giving instructions at times, you know. And a lot of times they're focused on the trainer only, but they hear the voice. And it's like, okay, he's saying to do this. And they'll do it. They've told me after the fight. So it's like, you do get close. Again, not with everyone. Sometimes, obviously, personalities just don't mesh. But that when it's something like that, then it's very professional. With Deontay, I was very close. We went to Mexico twice to fight out there. Again, seeing him win the world title that night in Vegas gave me a lot of satisfaction. We quieted a lot of critics. He brought back the world title to America. I was at dinner when the WBC called me and said, hey, we have his belt and we'd like to present it to him. And I texted him. I said, hey, where are you? I'm in my room. Okay, I'm with the WBC supervisor. Can we take you your belt? And went up to his room and gave him his belt, took a picture. I said, I'm very proud of you. And you know what? Now go defend it. Make yourself, your family, everybody, make us all proud. And I'll always be cheering you on, knowing that that was now the last time, at least for the moment, that I would see him or be a part of his career.
You touched on earlier in the show, and I've just thought of a follow-up question now, about how, you know, you said that you don't really want to see, like, sparring footage and stuff like that when you're signing a fighter. There's a famous story from the UK in soccer where this guy claimed that he was the cousin of this football player and the team actually signed him. Has that ever happened to you? Has something ever happened to you where you've watched sparring footage and you've actually given the guy a chance and you've seen him and he's absolutely terrible?
That happened a couple of times. Without even naming names, there was one fighter that looked he looked more intimidating than even Mike Tyson. And put him in the ring and it was like, oh, man. And then after that, turning down fights left and right, and said, look, it's not going to work for either one of us because I'm giving you fights, you're turning them down. You know what? I wish you all the best. And he went his way, we went our way. But I remember a story. I wasn't a part of it, but I remember a story of a young man. They started calling promoters and saying, look, this guy played for the 49ers, and he's a fighter now, and very similar. But this one had said he had played for the 49ers. So there was a big promotion behind that, you know, let's put him on X49er, this and that. And I think it came out in the promotion. And somebody called and said, hey, this guy was never a 49er. He never played. I think he tried out for the 49ers and then was cut or never made the pass the tryouts. So at that point, you're like, okay, you know what? Anything comes up like something that doesn't sound right, do some homework and investigate. So you learn from that. But that doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me because, you know what? Today it's probably harder because you could Google and get on the internet. But back then, you had to take their word. You had to take their word. And sometimes you're like, wow, I haven't heard that one, so it must be real. They come up with some good ones.
Did the fight go ahead for the ex 49er? Or?
He fought professionally a couple times, but I don't think he was ever signed as with a big promoter. That's the thing. He looked the part too. He was a heavyweight, a big guy. I think he fought a couple of our guys. I don't think he ever fought Deontay. I think he fought like Ashanti Jordan or something like that, or Seth Mitchell might have fought him. But it was a funny story to hear because it was like, wow. And I'm a big 49er fan, so I was gonna if I would have said, hey, let me get a picture with you, or let me get an autograph, he probably would have given it to me, and I would have been framing it and thinking, hey, that's a 49er.
All right, Robert, well, sort of thank you for your time. I think we've had just about an hour. If you want to tell everybody where they can find you on your social media, any Golden Boy events that are coming up.
Well, I'm very excited on November 13th. Don't miss it on the Zone, Munguia versus Rosado. We got a stacked undercard. Also on the 19th with Jason Quigley and Andrade. That's a matchroom card, but we also have Ronnie Rios fighting for the world title. He's the mandatory to MJ. And we'll have McWilliams Arroyo, who's a fighter promoted by Miguel Cotto in association with us at Golden Boy, fighting against Julio Cesar Martinez. So that night is Golden Boy against Matchroom. Don't miss it. And then we'll hopefully come back before the end of the year with another stellar card and exciting for the fans on the Zone.
Awesome. Right. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, pal. Take care. Cheers.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.